Now, In the Huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Hey guys, Dan Jonker here. Welcome to episode 2 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Today is special. We're going to dissect the minds of multiple basketball coaches. Before we get started, I want to tell you about our basketball coaching resource, CoachCallsTimeout.com. We have tons of plays, drills, and articles designed to help you become a better basketball coach. Check it out at CoachCallsTimeout.com. Today we have our first coaching roundtable to share with you. The first weekend in March was the Ontario Colleges Athletic Association Men's Basketball Championships. The night before the games began, we were lucky enough to round up the four most decorated coaches in the tournament. We sat them down together to talk about their coaching journeys, share some stories, and handle our full court press questions. So all four coaches were huddled around one microphone in a small conference room, which resulted in a few minor sound issues. But after the first question or two, we got it all figured out. Let's get right into it. All right, I want to welcome everybody to listen in on Coach Calls Timeout's first ever roundtable podcast. And we're doing it straight from the Ontario Collegiate Athletic Association Championships. And I have, it's Brian Jonker that's going to moderate this tonight. I'm the head coach at Mohawk College. And I have with me the brightest and best coaches in the OCAA. Certainly the most decorated. To my left is Sean Collins, the head coach of Humber College, the defending national champions. He's been the head coach at Humber now for 6 years. To his left is Trevor Costello, who also has an OCAA gold on his resume, as well as a National Coach of the Year. And to my right is Jim Flack, who is definitely the grandfather of the OCAA, with 24 years at Sheridan College. I believe 7 OCAA championships.
Yep, 7.
2 trips to the National Championship Final. Yep. And just hours ago was named the OCAA Coach of the Year for the umpteenth time, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. So we have a fantastic panel here tonight. And what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about coaching. And to get started, let's ask Sean, first of all, how and where did you start coaching? How did you get into coaching?
I guess the first time I got coaching, I got laid off work. I was 21 years old. I got laid off work and went back. I had a principal that was a basketball nut, played at Western. He coached me my last 2 years of high school. I walked in and he said, "Do you want to coach?" And I got started coaching junior boys basketball in 1987. And he was one of those guys that was actively involved in the community, PTA and everything else. And I was supposed to be his assistant, but he was never available. He always came for the last 15 minutes of practice. And when it came to the first game, he goes, "Sean, you coach, I'll help you. You know the kids and everything else." So that's kind of how I got started. And he ended up being my assistant for that year. And that was back in a time where an outside coach could be the head coach and you didn't need staff supervision and everything else back in the late 80s. So that was my first introduction to basketball. And then from that point in, I got hooked.
And where did you go after that?
I've been a community guy the whole time because I'm a firefighter full time. So I've jumped around from my own home school at McDonald. I coached girls at Agent Court Collegiate. And then I went to Brampton and did Central Peel. Had some successful years. And the funny part is I sent a number of players over my 6 years at Central Peel to Sheridan College to Jim Flack, who was the head coach at the time. So there's always a connection somewhere, six degrees of separation.
Yeah. Trevor, how'd you get started?
I got started. I was done at Algonquin my last year. And then there was a high school that was looking for a high school coach. And the coach of Algonquin at that time was Warren Newberry. And Warren approached me and says, "Can you go over to this school? They're looking for a coach if you want to coach." So actually it was these two twins that were recruited me. And they ended up playing for me at Algonquin after. But so I went over there, did an interview with the principal, and they said, "You're going to be dealing with some rough kids." And I took the job. And after that, it's just been great after that. So I did there. And then I I stayed there for a good 8-9 years. And then Hugh Lynn, who coached Algonquin after Warren and before Warren, brought me on as an assistant at Algonquin. And then I've just been there ever since.
Jim, how did James Naismith recruit you?
Actually, I started coaching instead of doing homework about the 9th or 10th grade. Before video games, there was a thing called Stratomatic basketball. You could buy in Sports Illustrated, use dice and Matrix, and had all NBA guys. And instead of doing my homework, that's what I did.
The kids still play that, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Dice and interactive. No. So you literally would go through a whole game and keep the stats on it. And so I did that while I played high school. And then played 1 year at York University, and then helped out my alma mater, Streetsville Secondary School, for a couple of years. On to Woodland Secondary School. Then I became a teacher at North Park Secondary School in Brant. I did that for a few years. Then Wayne Allison approached me about helping him out at Sheridan. 2 years as an assistant at Sheridan. I was the head coach at Seneca College for 1 year. And at that point, well, we made nationals with that team. And Sean was on that team and key to us even getting to the national championship that year. We were runners-up in Ontario. When I got home from that flight, Wayne Allison called me and said, I'm done and we're not interviewing. It's you. You got to come back. So after a nice steak dinner and a couple of beers, he called Leroy Casanova, who's been there even longer than I have. Said, come on and meet. We got to finish this off. So we made a deal right there, literally on the back of a menu. And so I did that for 8 years and became the athletic director. After that, I gave up a high school teaching career from which I could have retired in 3 years. Not that I regret it, but I could have retired in 3 years and I stayed coaching high school. So 24, 25 years later, I'm still banging around the league.
Trevor, when you first got into coaching, what's the type of stuff that you struggled with as a young coach?
I find I was close, when I first started, I was just fresh out of college. Sure, I knew the game, but I really didn't know the game. After being around guys forever, I feel like I know the game a little bit more. And, you know, just defensive stuff. Stuff that, forcing baseline, forcing left hand. I just was kind of just get out there and play. And you got some athletes, you run some stuff that we ran in college, so I tried to implement some of the stuff to the guys in high school, and in high school the talent level wasn't great, and the school I went to, like I was warned, was going to be attitudes, and there was plenty of attitudes that I struggled with, and because I had a chip on my shoulder myself, so it was like butting heads all the time. Anyways, after a couple years of getting my feet wet, feeling comfortable, things turned out really good, and I'm really happy where I am now, and I wouldn't change a thing being here part of the OCAA.
Do you guys find, I mean, all four of us have coached either at the high school to college level for over 20 years now. What approaches have you had to change with coaching kids from 20 years ago to today?
It's funny that the memories on the players that I had before, some of whom are in their 40s now, and I, unfortunately, one guy who played for me, I've had the first player ever actually deceased. Which is kind of a strange feeling. He had a heart attack and died. So you go through this full cycle of things, and you look back, and certainly I was a lot crazier back then. And time wears you down where you don't have that energy. You have to spend your energy more wisely. But in terms of the actual players themselves, there's no question, and I'll say definitively, that there's a sense of delusional nature on a lot of the young men today that we all deal with in almost every league, where they think they're going with the game, what they think they're going to do with it, and it's saddening, bordering on frightening, that they don't understand that they're reaching way beyond their grasp. It's a Disney generation where they're supposed to, everything's going to work out in the end with basketball, when really what we're supposed to be doing, what they're supposed to be doing, is playing and sharpening their skills, and maybe the odd guy will get a cup of coffee and play a little bit of professional basketball, but get an education and get a job is what this is really supposed to be about. That has as they say, jumped the shark completely, and it's sad to watch, and it's tough to deal with. But when you can get them to realize that, what they're really doing here, it's very rewarding. That doesn't mean you have to quit basketball. You just have to put it in its proper place.
Do you guys have, I mean, let's talk about mentoring a little bit. Do each of you have a mentor that kind of got you into this or that you've leaned on over the years?
Well, for me, it's been Hugh Lynn. Hugh Lynn, Jim knows Hugh, Sean knows Hugh. He used to coach at Algonquin forever, and he was the kind of guy that, you know, he kept me on the team when I really wasn't a talented kid when I first tried out for Algonquin. But as he said, another practice, you're diving out of bounds first to save a ball. I got to keep you for another practice. Keep you for another practice. And just his influence and told me the story, kept me around. And then after years, it didn't take more than five games and I was starting for him. I was on the verge of being cut. Then I ended up starting for him as a post, 5'11 post. And the respect, the mutual respect we had for each other, like I had a father, but he was like a father, like Thanksgiving time. He'd lived out in Smiths Falls. He would bring Thanksgiving dinner to me, only specifically me every year. He always seemed to take care of me, always had best interest for me. And he told me, you know, I'm going to try to recommend you for this job at the head coach when I'm retiring after 4 years. And it was offered to the other assistant at that time, which was Jim Kent. But his demands were a little too much and he wasn't going to be around. So Ron Port, again, another great, great person, just handed me the reins. And ever since then, it's just I'm thankful for Ron and Huey, man. They have put me where I am with the basketball today. And I really appreciate those guys.
Yeah, for me, it was it started with Bob Bean, who, you know, is a Hall of Fame coach and won a number of championships at York University, and I was fortunate to be on the 84-85 team. Man, that was great basketball, a great team to work with every day. And you talk about the heyday of the OUA, at least in the western part or central western part of Ontario. The Ontario Championship that year, we played at Waterloo. There was no seats, and it was Waterloo and York sort of had a thing that had gone on for quite some time that is a distant memory now, but it was an intense rivalry. So when I first started, I went to Bob a lot. Believe it or not, name from the past, Tim Darling, tried to get me to come be an assistant at Guelph. He has his own personality too, but I used to steal stuff.
Trevor from him. Probably could connect with Tim really well.
Yes.
Well, actually, now that we're sitting here and I have my assistant over there, Shwil Duwal, who was supposed to come and play for me the year after, suddenly Tim Darling had him down at Acadia as Shwil was 1 week into school at Algonquin. So well, that's Tim, why I Tim chuckle
has,
about
Tim
that.
Tim has his own ways. He's in Hong Kong. His ways are not my ways, but technically he was extremely, extremely sharp. So I wouldn't say mentor, but then, of course, I did take the job over from Wayne Allison, who, you know, really in 13 years was a big factor in Ontario basketball. Sheridan won two national championships with him and four OCAA championships. And I worked with him for 2 years. And then my first 4 or 5 years, I took over the position at 27. My first 4 or 5 years, it wasn't X's and O's. X's and O's, I'm a pretty stubborn guy. And I like to be, one of the reasons I love coaching is the creativity of it. I like to be creative with what we do. So it wasn't a lot of that, but it was more just somebody to exercise my demons and frustrations to on a constant basis. And I was so fortunate to have him be the guy hire me. You talk about somebody who is misjudged. This is one of the kindest people in the world, not when you're playing basketball with him. And ego-free, you would think that somebody with that success who hired me would be quick second guess or what have you. There was nothing but 100% support, and I never had anything but friendship and love and respect from that guy, and he's been in my corner all the way and is to this day, and I count him amongst one of my closest friends. And so in terms of mentoring me in those first years especially, that was vital, and making sure, as we've all been, when you're in the dumps, when things don't go your way, pick you up by the collar and say, get back in there, you're fine. It was incredibly important.
And by the way, I was a player when Wayne was coaching, and he scared me.
Yeah.
He was a very scary man. He was a very scary man to me. But after I got to know him, it was always that. And there's an article in the Algonquin Times. He paid me a great compliment and said how great of a player I was during one of these games. And ever since that time, I had tremendous respect for Wayne.
A lot of it's a big show. He's a pretty soft guy inside.
When I first started in the league coaching, Wayne was always the first guy to shake my hand when I came into the Sheridan gym. Yep. If we happened to beat you one day, he was the first guy to come over and shake your hand and say good game.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a special guy.
And he was hard on the refs. Oh, he sat in that front row, and man, he was like a fourth referee at times to me.
Manager of Sheridan Bruins.
Yeah.
Self-entitled.
GM.
Sean, who mentored you?
I started at a really young age. I guess probably when I went back to school and played for Jim. It gave me a different perspective on how a coach approaches things, the details of scouting and everything else and preparing for the next opponent. Just the drills and how you approach things and the progression of different things was probably the step that got me into where my head was a sponge. And then from there, it was basketball camps. I remember going to Olympia like two or three times back in the early 90s, like two or three weeks, and like Hugh Lynn's there, John Scobie's there, Larry Angus is there, Vaughn McPherson from Strathroy, like Petrushak's from there, and this is all in the same week. So you're sitting there, I'm 20-something years old, and all these guys have already coached for 25 years, and you sit down and have a beer with them at the end of the night in the coach's lounge, and then after two or three, they tell stories about old teams, and then they start talking about X's and O's, and then you can turn around and tap in, okay, what are you doing this, and what are you doing? But you got them for a whole week. It's not an hour. It's not a coach's clinic.
But Sean played a year and a half for me. And I can tell you right now, Sean is the guy. We've all got the guy or two or three on your team if you're lucky. I've got two on my team this year where you're trying for the umpteenth time to explain why we're setting this screen or why we're defending this way so it all fits together. But Sean would be the guy. I still remember it, Sean, that you'd be trying to explain to player A this simple concept for the 36th time. And Sean's got it on the first time, and you have to hold, I was a teacher, you have to hold Sean back, and on that team, there was actually three guys at Seneca that got it, and you're kind of looking at him, rolling your eyes, going, just please be patient, let me catch this guy up, and you can tell, and Bob Bain would say the same thing about me, he just knew, even though it was a year, this guy is really listening, and I knew I probably wasn't going to play more in a year, I was burned out on playing, I knew I wanted to coach, so I just sponged everything I could from approach to things all the way down. And you can kind of, Trevor and Hugh, and you certainly had Mohawk had that type of effect the way you played, coaching against it. You can tell when a guy's actually engaged in what's going on and not just running up and down.
But as coaches, you're trying to make that connection with the players, and you need to understand each guy and what they're capable of and what level they learn at. I mean, ultimately, I guess that's really what coaching is all about, right? It's building a connection with people and getting to understand and know what makes each one of those people tick.
One of the best things I can relate to the kids are is because, like I said, it took me 5 games as a rookie, and then I was starting. And then I started as a post my second year. Third year, I was still starting. And then I could never understand this, and this is very sad, but my fourth year, Hugh Lynn brought in some studs. Greg Shirley, Mark Headley, some studs from Toronto.
We had a 5'11 post?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It was some really Pascal de Couvreur. You remember, though. That was the year.
That was the year
you were playing. So we brought in some studs, and I went from a starter to 13th, 14th. I didn't even see the court in my senior year. Barely. And I would go home at night, and there was nights where I'd be in tears saying, what am I doing? Why am I still playing this game? What, like, I've had such a great career. Why am I still here? Why am I doing this? And I find, so when I hear kids whining about playing time and all this, I can relate to them, and I tell them the same story. I say, listen, you got to be ready to go. You got to get better. Guys are getting better. You're not getting better. It's the same situation with me. I didn't get really better. I wasn't in the gym like nowadays. Guys are in the gym working on. I never seen a weight room. Weight room? What's a weight room? Never really tried to get better. I was too busy worrying about other things than getting better. I was very upset, but I can understand. Years later, it took me a while, but I can understand from Huey's point of view. And Huey never held it against me. Like I said, he brought me in as an assistant and kept me going and gave me the opportunity to where I was today. And I find that's one thing in my coach or playing and coaching that I can really sympathize with the kids when it comes to playing time and how much they're actually going to be on the court.
It's funny. I right now I have a daughter in grade 8. So I coach her club team as well. So I've got grade 8 girls and then obviously college men. From a basketball perspective, we actually do a lot of the same things.
Sure.
From, you know, it's no different.
Yeah.
From the way I treat them. I mean, the language is a little different with college guys, but the way I treat them isn't a lot different either.
But your engagement's different.
It is.
They ask different questions.
They do ask different questions, and they don't always understand necessarily.
They ask you the what if question.
And don't you enjoy
it? What happens if this happens, or what happens if that? Like, they have to understand offense on another level because they're really trying to execute it exactly the way you've laid it out.
Yeah.
Where a guy won't ask you that question.
And it's awesome because I know work at an elementary school. And I coach the grade 4, 5, 6 girls, grade 4, 5, 6 boys, 7 and 8 girls, 7 and 8 boys. And basketball is basketball, but man, it's fun to coach those kids. Like, I mean, the college coaching, college basketball, the intensity and just, it's awesome. There's nights that you guys probably all think too, it's -20 outside. Really? Do I want to get in my car, drive to the gym and listen to these guys complain? And there's many nights like that. But you know, at that elementary school level, there doesn't seem to be any of that because they're always so damn excited to be in the gym, wanting to learn. So I can understand your grade 8 girl. It's so much fun, and you love teaching them, and you can do little traps, which works to perfection with the young guys. But you move it over to the college level, and that passes underneath the basket. Yeah, the skip pass is underneath for the layup. But the trap at a grade 4, 5, 6, you're manipulating the game.
I coach my daughter's 17 now, and she's retired. She had plantar fasciitis. It just wrecked her career, so she's not going to play at the next level, and she could have. But did I get a wake-up call, and it was in grade 7 when I was coaching her house league team. It's the only time I coached her. I would sit where the manager sits on the end of the bench and advise coach when I was asked. But other than that, I never coached because I was nervous that I would, it's my only child, and I was nervous that the coach player relationship would fracture the father daughter relationship. So I was just, cause she's a pretty sensitive kid. But I went, there was like 4 seconds left in a tie game, timeout, and I get the timeout and I go into the timeout, and I kid you not, there's 4 of the girls, including my daughter, who have their hands out, and they're asking who got a French manicure and who's got shellac and who's got one on. And there's 4 seconds left in a tie game. And I just said, okay, well, let's try and throw the ball at the rim. Because they don't care.
No.
Are we getting ice cream after this, or what's going on? And who's got shellac on their nails? You know?
Keeps everything in perspective.
Yeah.
It is... It's an eye opener that way, for sure. But it's
a game.
It's so innocent, though, right?
It's a game.
Yeah, it's
you get down to it. It's a game.
And from the girls' side to the guys' side, I think there's a difference too. Whereas the girls, sure, there's competitiveness at some level with some of them, but a lot of it is social. They like being there with each other and hanging out. And then they play. And if they win, they win. And if they lose, they lose. Some days they don't even know if they won or lost. Right. And you go away, right?
And I'm like Jim says, my son now, who's in grade 8, he's a pretty damn good ball player right now, but I can't coach him. I think our relationship would just deteriorate if I stepped in, because even now as I try to help him along, he doesn't want to hear from me. He wants to hear, my coach says this is what I should be doing. I don't ruffle the feathers. I just kind of, listen, just try this, but when you get a chance, just try it. And I try not to interfere. It's tough, and it's different, I think, from boys and girls. Like you, they're talking about French manicure or manicures.
Yeah.
And my son now, their team is like 40-0, and they haven't lost. They came to Toronto last week and beat Scarborough Blues. They beat a bunch of teams, and they got a really good team. And I just, you know what? I don't want to interfere, and I don't. And maybe in a couple years down the road, I might. But right now, I don't think I'm ready to do this.
Does the coach in you guys really make a difference in those situations? In that, you know, when you have parental interference at some level once in a while, I haven't had a lot of it, but at one. They don't. They're not there every day, right? And they don't understand that we're looking out for what's best for 13 or 15 or the group, where they're looking out for what's best for theirs. Yep. So they don't get that part of it. So now when you put the shoe on the other foot, and when I'm not coaching my daughter in fastball, for example, and I see things that go on in the game and I want to say something in the car afterwards about, geez, that coach should have done this or that coach. And I bite my tongue because I say, you know what? 13 people doing whatever the hell he says, whether it's right or wrong, is still better than having 12 parents go home and complain and all of them be fractured when they come back and not believe in the coach.
As a parent in the stands, you got to bite your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
On the car ride homes, when my son played, it was all about, you know, we would talk about situations. Why did you shoot the ball in this situation or that? So we would talk about a situation rather than what happened in the whole game or why didn't you play or anything else. We talked about the game itself and his interaction within the game. And I didn't coach him a whole lot. And I think he probably wanted a little bit more hands-on with me, but I coached him in the driveway. And because of that engagement, we played one-on-one all the time. And he remembers, like, he's 20-something years old playing pro basketball over. But, like, now he's like, he remembers the times when he was 8 years old and I would block the ball and I would tease him that I was like Shaquille O'Neal and I'd block it down the street and have him run down and go get it again and play again and play again and play again. And he thanked me just for that one-on-one interaction more than anything than coaching in a team atmosphere because he got a bit of both. He got dad and he got coach at the same time.
Well, I think, too, now I'm coaching my daughter. She's of our 12. Last year is the first year where it's not the fair play, where you don't have to have the equal shifts and all that stuff. And my daughter's one of the back three or four. Okay. So last year, she probably only played about 4 minutes a game, 5 minutes a game. I still play them all, but
you should play them all.
Right. So, but four or five of them don't play as equal as the other ones. I think when you coach your own kid, they either need to be clearly one of the best or clearly the other way and you understand it, because anything in the middle, the people on the other side of the stands are always going to be saying you're either favoring your kid or whatever. Right. But I'll never forget last year. I mean, it's hard on my wife when she comes to the games and she's an assistant and my daughter's not playing as much. And we go home after one game and I said to my daughter one time last year, I said, Sid, I'm really sorry that you haven't been playing a lot lately. You know, you're working hard, blah, blah, blah. And she stopped me and she said, Dad, she goes, you need to do what's best for our team. And right there I thought, wow. She gets it.
She gets it. That'd be cool. She should have her come talk to all the teams in this tournament.
And now this year she's improved to the point where she's playing 12 minutes a game and she deserves to play the 12 minutes a game.
And there's a life lesson as a parent.
But
and
it's
coach.
Tough. It's sure. Really tough.
It's brutal.
You know, it's.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Coaching your kids. I mean, you do it because you think it's the right thing. I mean, there was a time in fastball in particular where we watched our daughters, and you sit in the sidelines and wonder. I said to my wife, look, we can't complain about it. If you're going to complain about it, then do the job yourself. So, you know, then we started coaching our own kids a little bit more. But it's definitely not easy. That's for sure. Okay, finally, I want you, two-part thing. Tell me what you're proud of about your program. And tell me if you were out there talking to kids, parents, coaches, what do you look for when you're out there trying to recruit kids? Sean?
Well, when I came into Humber, it was basically Mike Cates that grew the program. You know, 20 plus years, 5 national championships and everything else. And Daryl was an assistant for him. Daryl brings me in as an assistant. So you're learning from an extension of how Mike created the tradition and the strength of what Humber basketball was. Daryl carried it on and added a little bit of his personality to it. And me learning from Daryl, I like to think that I've added a little bit of personality and continued the tradition of Humber in the winning ways and how we conduct ourselves. Humber is itself, in their athletic facility and in the athletic department, is always excellent and treats our athletes very well as our coaches. As it goes for players, you know, you're always looking for character kids. Like, we are a learning institution first, basketball second. You know, I've learned over the years that, you know, you have to take a look at kids that do have an interest. when you recruit a kid that's very talented and everything else, and he can't figure out what he wants to study, and he ends up in general arts, I really find that it ends up being a dead end, and that's those kids that you lose at Christmas, or you lose after 1 year, because they haven't found what they're really interested in. So if they can't find that interest at Humber anyway, they don't really have any success. So we really try to find kids. And if they don't have an interest, we try to, you know, show them different things to try to create an interest or anything else. And the ones that do find programs and like streams of study other than just general studies, we've had better success. The 11 years I've been there, when we have not lost a player at Christmas, a rotation player, because of academics, we've had a very successful season, and we've had a strong run in the playoffs. Every year that we lost a key player or a rotation guy, we had a quick exit. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but I think, you know, it builds strength when you can have continuity from year to year. And when you have kids creating that level of self-discipline and having an emphasis on doing schoolwork, it carries over to the guys that aren't necessarily strong students, because you've created a locker room that school is important. We're not going to the NBA, and that I got to get my grades done. So guys that are like a 55 average coming in, they go to a 65 average. And I think when those kind of kids happen, I feel like we've been successful, because those are the small victories that really, you know, make your program strong.
Trevor Algonquin?
Yeah. Same as Sean. We Hugh Lynn started up the program there, and he got it going, and back again after an 0-18 season, he came in and then made it a reputable school, a basketball school anyways. It started off at Division II, and then we moved back up to Division I, and the consistency of us being in the playoffs and competing last year. And the only solace I took was Jim Flack didn't make the playoffs last year, because we hadn't made the playoffs in maybe not his 32 years, but us was 28 years that we had not. We'd always been in the postseason. And last year, thank you, Jim, for not making it, because so we both were in the final the year before, and you made me feel a little bit better. Didn't really cure it, but it made me feel a little bit better. And
Sean,
I just
probably both thank you as well.
and just the consistency of being always at the top, always being there. And I remember Hugh Lynn again talking. Every time was at practice. You want to be the Humbers. You want to be the Sheridans. The Humbers, the Sheridans, the Humbers. And he always brought up Humber, Sheridan, Humber, Sheridan. Now we can throw in Mohawk into the equation, which is dedication to you. But always when I was growing up and playing, it was always the Humbers and the Sheridans, the Humbers. And I got this delusional.
Well, if I can interject, I think it was 24 years, Trevor, where it was either Humber.
It was always Humber, Sheridan, Humber, Algonquin.
Or Sheridan. Well, in the final,
yeah,
it was either Humber, Sheridan, or Humber, Sheridan.
Yeah.
For 24 consecutive years, one of those two teams or both of them were in the final. And like we, Algonquin's always
we would
been
be
around.
There, yeah. And we would invite, and we would always be the bronze. We would always be bronze. And then, as Hugh would say, we'll invite one other team in. It's always Humber, Sheridan, Algonquin.
Yeah. And so the point is what you've talked about, yeah, the league. Is we sit around this table now, and in my tenure now, there's no gimme putts tomorrow.
No, and that's exactly.
And there's no gimme putts, you know, on any given day. Well, anybody can beat anybody.
I made the point last week when someone asked me how the tournament's going to be, and I said, well, there's six out of the eight teams have been ranked nationally this year.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a completely different league.
It's totally differently. You're so right. Like, any night, Lambton now, Mohawk, just other teams are stepping up, and it's not always, you guys are still the powerhouses,
well,
and you always have to worry about you, but it's not like it used to be where it's domination like
they're,
you guys.
They're Duke and Carolina,
yeah,
and the rest of us are now becoming the Louisvilles and Virginias,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, where we can compete, and but they're still Duke and Carolina.
Well, there's it's out of history and tradition. Like, Sheridan, one of the things I'm proud of when you're talking about that is we've had three coaches since 1968. Three.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So I'm very proud of that. And I'm also, I'll take a step out of the basketball realm for just 1 second as an athletic director. I just got this morning, before we left, one of my staff told me that we have 148 varsity athletes at Sharon, which would probably be the smallest number of the four schools that were here. We just have a different approach to how much we're going to offer in terms of varsity. And of the 148 student athletes we have there, 50 are honor students. That's a ridiculously high number, a third of them. And so when I came in there, I was a teacher and I have an MEd, and that's my pedigree. My family are teachers that go way back to Pembroke and Eganville, way back in the 1800s. And so I've always taken that approach. And I've taken some chances on some guys. There's no business I should have taken chances on. But, you know, you hope, I can honestly look anybody in the eye and tell them that of all the players I've ever had, there's only been one where I was pretty sure he was yanking my chain when he told me he wanted to do something in school. Either the other ones that didn't, either they were lying at the time or they were a good salesman, because I've chased them away. But there's one at the time I said, I don't think this guy's telling me the truth, but he's a good ball player. And you know what? That was an error, and it's the one time, and I'll live with that till the end of my career, because that really bothered me. Because of the family I come from, everything, that is, if I ever had to look at my parents and knock on wood, they're still around in their 80s, both professional educators, and say that I cut a corner to try and win a championship or whatever, I would just feel the utmost shame. Even with a couple of guys that we've had in the last 5 years that were all stars and great players and, you know, transfers and guys who actually made progress. They didn't all graduate, but they actually made progress. Even if it was just to play basketball, I could lay my head down on the pillow at night and say, okay, you know, at least we're paying, not just paying lip service to this, he's trying. And some of them come from very difficult circumstances, yeah. But at least he's trying. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm proud of.
This year, one thing we can say we are proud of is our scholarship money. Basketball, men's basketball, we're lucky to get two a year. Lucky. This year, the first semester, we had eight guys getting money back just
great
because of...
And for people who are listening to this and don't necessarily understand how our league works, you've got to pass your classes to get the money.
Yes. You have to have a C-plus average to get the minimum, and we do it now. Martha, our AD, has stepped in, and she does it in tiers. You get the full 1250 if you have your A average, 900 for the B-plus, and then 600 for the C-plus or whatever it is.
That's our model.
Well, I want to wrap this up with something that we're going to call full court press. I don't want explanations. All I want is short
answers.
Yes and no's or short answers. All right? We ready?
Sure.
Yep.
Sean, up three. 5 seconds to go. Other team has the ball. Are you fouling?
I'm up three?
You're up three. Other team has the ball.
No.
No. Trevor?
Nope. No foul.
Yeah. Nope. Anyone in the world on your team, down one. 5 seconds to go. Who do you want? Trevor.
Anyone in the world on my team.
Anyone. Who do you want? 5 seconds to go, down a point.
My all-time favorite player, Saeed Kosar.
Okay.
Anyone in the world?
I want my guy, Saeed Kosar.
I got Curry. You're insane.
You know what? My guy, Saeed, tore his ACL this weekend at the age of 38. He has made over $1 million.
Sorry, over a million dollars.
Anyways.
Saeed Kosar, Curry.
Yeah.
Curry. I was going to say Jordan. Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
All right. If you could spend one day as an assistant to any coach, any sport in the world, what coach would you be an assistant to for one day?
Belichick.
Al McGuire.
Man, oh man, good question. Dean Smith.
All right. Does anyone here have a book or a resource they would recommend? Coaching book or resource to recommend?
Well, I'm a huge reader of politics, sports, and religion. Anything that can start a fight at Christmas, that's what I read. So one of the best books I ever read when I was a young man was A Season on the Brink. It follows the Bob Knight and the Indiana Hoosiers through a year that was extremely tumultuous. Yeah, it is so entertaining.
I haven't read that one.
It is one of the best basketball books ever written.
Trevor, do you read?
What Stuff Good Players Know. I don't know if you've ever read that one. It's a pretty good one.
Anything, Sean?
Probably the last one. It's got nothing to do with books. It's Slow and Fast Thinking.
just about, you know, how we intuition versus, you know, long thought out processes and everything else. So I thought with today's kids, it might be a good read.
Yeah.
Jim, offense or defense?
Defense.
Trevor?
Offense.
Sean?
It's funny, as a coach.
Offense or defense?
Defense.
All right, Wonderlic question. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
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 All right, and this one's just for Trevor. PJs or suit and tie?
I go PJs, but Flack and all the OCA changed the rule, so I have to go suit and tie now. But if I still had a choice, PJs it is.
All right. Guys, wish you all the best this weekend, except for Trevor, who we got tomorrow in the first round. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad you guys stuck around for me today, and hopefully you had as much fun as I did doing this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks,
Brian. Thanks a lot, guys.
So there you have it, our first coaching roundtable. I'd love to know what you think. Leave us a comment in the show notes page at coachcallstimeout.com/2. That's the number 2. It's always interesting to me to discover how successful people started their journey. All three of these coaches had different stories with one thing in common. They just wanted to be around the game of basketball as much as possible. If you watch them coach, it's very apparent that they love the game and they enjoy teaching and coaching. The next episode we have spans across Canada. We have another coaching roundtable with coaches from Alberta, British Columbia, and Prince Edward Island. All three coaches are extremely successful and share great stories about their journeys. Again, the discussion is moderated by our very own Brian Jonker, the head coach at Mohawk College. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us get noticed by iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe or leave us a review. Reviews go a long way in helping others find us. You can also go to the show notes page and share it on social media. That's coachcallstimeout.com/2. Thanks, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks for the next episode.